Hello, everybody. This is Carlos Rodriguez, sports editor of the Bell Ringer. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 6 of the Sports Squad, brought to you by Augusta University's Department of Communication and Bell Ringer Phoenix Media. Today, the Sports Squad speak about the AU men's and women's basketball teams. Joining the squad today are Chad Cook, who does color commentary for Augusta University basketball and is a publisher of AUG B-Ball, and Dr. David Bula, who is the chair of communication at AU. First, with the men's team, they defeated Land University 87-72 in their season opener. Chad, earlier in the day before the game, you made a post about sophomore Lee Flanor and junior Darren Lucas White being two key contributors that Augusta would depend on against Landon the rest of the season. And you were exactly right. Darren, a guy who's arguably their best defensive player, has been known for making a presence every game on a defensive end. But on top of leading the team with five steals in the game, he also led the team in scoring with 22 points. He's also normally the sixth man, but with senior Troy Cracknell out, he stepped into the starting lineup. And with Lee, I think everyone was excited to see him play. He hasn't played longer than anybody else. Last time he played was January 4th. He comes out, scores 12 points, which is the most he ever scored last season, and also made his presence on a defensive end, grabbing rebounds and recording steals. What were your thoughts on the performance of both men?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Darren being the sixth man. I always call him the sixth starter. He's been a contributor on two championship-level squads, and he hit the ground running in the opener. I want to say he had over 20 points in the final game of last season, a loss to Georgia College as well. So, you know, he's really, 9 months later, just extended that solid play that he's been known for since coming here. You mentioned that post I made, and it's interesting because, I made some posts about some of the other returners, and you can go to statistics and things with the other guys. Darren and Lee, and certainly Darren with a longer track record, the statistics don't begin to tell the story of his impact on the team, but that all changed in the opener. That 28 points, 8 rebounds for a 6 foot tall guard, 5 steals, you know, 2 back-to-back steals that led to open layups that made a 1-point game, a 5-point game at a key stretch in the second half. He was the only player besides freshman John Whitehead who looked comfortable scoring the basketball in the first half when Augusta was in danger of being blown out. And but, you know, his, you know, it was really neat to be at courtside. You know, the only people in attendance were people like the three of us at courtside. And, you know, Darren would get a steal or a deflection or a loose ball, and the whistle would be blown dead, and he'd walk down the court, and he'd be near us, and I'd hear him, you know, he'd say, "No," or "Let's go." And, you know, "No" was like, "You will not score on me. You will not, get what you're trying to get done." And so he played with the emotion that you would play with in front of a packed house. And then that emotion, just was contagious with the rest of the team, with Flanor, and Tyree Myers was another guy who really laid it on the line defensively, got the team going. So, you know, it was a great to see the Jaguars back in action.
Yeah, and Dr. Bula, I know you were talking to Coach Dimitris about, you know, Lee's game and how athletic he is. You know, what were you, speak about your thoughts on, you know, the way he played during that game.
Well, let me go back to Darren for a second. One thing that's really starting to happen with him, and I'll have to say that I was a defensive-minded coach when I coached high school basketball, so I love this guy. But he's finishing now on offense. He used to have these great drives, and he'd go up, and he gets hammered every time he goes to the hole by two or three people. But he would miss the layup and then go to the foul line. Well, now he's getting three-point plays. So these steals are turning into big, you know, 5-point turnarounds a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Lee, on the other hand, much like I think both Darren and Tyree is extremely athletic. We knew that last year when we saw him for about a half a season. And he really, I think as much as Darren, really sparked the team right there in the first 5 minutes of the second half. And it was just explosive because we haven't had that. I mean, in a sense, he's kind of replacing Rafael Monteiro, who is now playing the Brazilian Pro League. But he's a totally different player. You know, Monteiro is definitely a classical post player who's got a lot of great moves and is really savvy, kind of knows how to get in the head of the other players. Lee's jumping over people and going around people. But it was also his speed defensively. But, man, he got – it's like every rebound, he got his hands on it or he got it. And then with Darren, I'm going to tell you something. You better – no matter how good a point guard you are, even if you're 5'11", you better be ready. His hands are quick as lightning. He's ready to steal the ball anytime. And I really think he, you know, I think the box score said he had 5 steals. It seemed like he had 15. I mean, it was just constantly getting his hand on the ball. So he and Lee are doing that. And let's just go back to the halftime. We don't know what Coach Mitra said. We asked him. He didn't really want to talk about what he said. Who knows? But clearly, Lee, Tyree, and Darren got it in their mind they had to bring more energy into the into play. And it happened on the defensive end, and that got them going. And then Miguel Arnold, who's the junior sort of shooter on this team, he's a really good shooter on this team along with Troy. He wasn't making his threes, but he started making these mid-range jumpers and these drives, and he got the same kind of energy that the three of them had, and that's what really, I think, turned the game around. And then when they needed Tyshawn Crawford, the big 7-foot-1 center, to make some free throws because they went to the Hack-a-Shack, he made them, and that kept Lander, at bay. It was a really good, what was it, 59-29 the second half? What an incredible second half that was, and Lander's good.
They really
don't have
size,
but they're good.
Yeah. Speaking of Lander and how good they are, I was telling Brendan Robinson from Channel 6 before the game this, and then he mentioned it with Dip. We were going when we were in this room talking about the NCAA tournament last March. We didn't know if it would happen. It ended up not happening. Augusta was in Tennessee, and so was Lander, set to play each other in the 4-5 matchup. Lander coming off of a Peach Belt tournament championship, Augusta coming off of an upset loss in the quarterfinals. So that game was 9 months in the making, in my opinion. An NCAA tournament matchup 9 months later. We're going to get to do it 3 more times against Lander, which is pretty neat, also pretty scary for a Jags fan. And but I thought it was interesting that when Brendan Robertson asked Coach Dip Mitras about the game being 9 months in the making, he said, Dip, the first thing Dip said was something like, "Oh yeah, I forgot about that." And I can't believe that Coach Dip forgot about that, because it's all I could think about leading up to that game.
Yeah, and then in the first half, Chad, obviously the team was down by 15. Lander played great defense and kind of matched with great offense. They had pretty much the energy that Augusta had in that second half. And, Augusta native Deion Berrien was dominant that first half, had 16 points in the first half. Speak about his performance, and, what do you think Augusta kind of lacked that quarter, or that half, I should say?
Yeah, Coach Mitras talked about it after the game. That big man who turned, or a guy who's guarded by a big man, Deion's 6'5 or 6'6, but he plays like a guard, but he plays at 4 or even 5 positions. So one of our 2 big men, we always play with 2 big men, are going to guard him, and that's just uncomfortable for a big man. And so he's going to get opportunities, and Deion's streaky, and he was on fire that first half, and it was, it just kept coming and coming. And, I think with Lander leading 43-28 at halftime, they were obviously rolling. And I think the difference between those two teams, Lander got rolling through the ball going in the basket, and they get a good feeling from that, and that's what sparked them to their run. Augusta got rolling and got some momentum from the defensive end. And, it's just at this very moment, I would say that's a difference between those two teams. You have one team that feeds off of its offensive rhythm and its ability to put the ball in the basket. Several players, Berrien, Patterson, I think it's Jermaine Patterson, Sidney Robinson, several players on that Lander team that can put the ball in the basket. Augusta's got that too, but they really feed, as we started the podcast off with, they really feed off of the energy of guys like Darren Lucas White, Tyree Myers, Lee Flanor on the defensive end.
Yeah, and I know you watched Berrien during high school too. Was he always the guy that kind of stretched out the floor? I know he had a couple threes yesterday and kind of had a lot of contact finishes at the rim too. Was he always kind of a player like that?
Yeah, Deion, he's something else. From the time he stepped on the court as a junior, second semester at Lakeside after transferring from Richmond, he was a face-up shooter. You wondered at first, was it a fluke when he's making all these jump shots? And then you found out that, no, that's the way he prefers to play. I remember him making a big three against Heritage in a big game his junior year. No, I'm sorry, his senior year when Heritage was ranked in the top two or three in the state. Lakeside actually beat him three times that season, and Deion was a huge reason why. He's been filling it up for a long time. He had two very productive seasons in junior college ball in Oklahoma. Came back. He's the kind of guy, they're all over the Peach Belt, area players who can flat out play, who can flat out score, and every time we go against them, you wonder, you know that they want to kill Augusta, and you wonder, are they going to kill Augusta? Because guys like Christian Chambers, Deion Berrien, you know, I could go on and on. Nate Dunlop this year at UNC Pembroke. Chambers is at Columbus State. All those guys can get us on any given night. And he did for one half, but not for two.
Yeah. And luckily, we do have an Augusta native that, you know, played two nights ago, too. John Whitehead had a very great performance. And, you know, Chad, you watched him throughout his high school career. And I got a chance to play against him a couple times in high school. So I never really watched him play as much as you, but from my perspective against playing against him, he was always someone that was, you know, known for attacking the rim. He could shoot, but, you know, most of his points, if not all, came from at the rim. And, you know, he made 3 3-pointers in the game. What was it like seeing him stretch the floor and, you know, make those 3-pointers?
Well, first of all, it was very refreshing and relieving because at the time when he made his first two out of two in the first half, it were the only two jump shots made by Augusta in the first half, and it helped Augusta narrow a lead to 15, if there is such a thing. You know, it would have been over 20 if John wouldn't have made those two shots. And then he made another one in the second half. John, I remember him being as a freshman at Glen Hills, and he made three after three that year. And I always wondered, like, is this for real? Because I knew him a little bit already, and I didn't know him as a three-point shooter. And he just kind of kept making them throughout high school. And everybody, I was talking to an old friend on the way here, and he was telling me, I was telling him about John, and I said, you know, if he's going to make shots, watch out. And he said, yeah, that was always my question about John. Will he be able to make shots at the college level? And he, that's what he did in the first night. We didn't see the high flying John Whitehead, the rim rocking, you know, above the rim player. And we will see that sooner rather than later, I think. But the fact that he's making shots early, if that continues, you know, 4 years of John Whitehead, I'll tell you, there's no better there's no buddy with a higher potential that you get for 4 years. You know, we only get Tyshawn Crawford, I guess, for 3 years, being a 7'1". There's a lot of potential there. But John Whitehead with his package, and now, you know, what's looking like his ability to translate that jump shooting to the college level, you know, it's just really exciting.
You know, the thing about him is he played only 9 minutes and had 9 points. That's the kind of thing a coach will look at, especially. And when I saw him in practice, I'm like, what I liked about him was just the overall sort of basketball IQ and the defensive stuff and the hustle. And I know Dip really says this guy loves basketball. That's what he really likes.
He always
about
says
him.
That.
Yeah, every time so, you know, he's going to play. And in a sense, you can already start to see he becomes Lee's backup, or potentially you can bring him in even for Tyshawn, although I think Timmy Sellers more has that role. But he's going to give this team another dimension that it didn't have last year, in addition to Lee, because there was no athlete / basketball player that he could turn to like that, who's a 6'6 guy who can kind of play a couple of positions. And, you know, that game, you know, Dip's got to play him three more times. He may have to go to a more of a three-guard, two-small-forward lineup, because that's what Lander is. Lander doesn't have any big people, and you know, it's almost like if you put a big center out there and a strong forward out there, it's like you're playing two different games. I'm sure, you know, I'm not going to tell Coach how to coach, but I'm sure he's thinking about stuff like that. But boy, that was a great 9 minutes that he put on, and I agree with you. I really am looking forward to seeing this guy develop over the next 4 years.
Yeah, you mentioned him playing against Lander. The thought I kept having, Coach Mitras addressed it in a way after the game when he kept referring to when Troy comes back. And Troy's the perfect player to put at that four spot in a game against Lander if they play right. Tyshawn Crawford the way they played him in the first game. Where the four man's defender was behind Tyshawn and Tyshawn's primary defender was in front, in essence leaving the other post player unguarded. You can't get that cross court pass to that guy for a layup, so he has to flash to the free throw line. Lee and Timmy Sellers weren't comfortable catching that ball and scoring it from the free throw line. And, you know, Troy's just a no-brainer when he comes back, being a great shooter. He catches that ball, makes you pay. He can defend the four on the other end. Right. Problem solved. But during that specific game, you know, I kept wondering if John would take that role. But, you know, I totally get Coach Mitras maybe not wanting to go to that because, you know, it's one thing with Troy, a veteran, a senior, a guy that's been through everything. He'll know exactly what to do. John, you know, first college right. game. You know, right. he's probably been playing the wing all preseason long. Right. You know, giving him a whole new position in the first night on the fly probably wasn't quite in the cards.
You know, another thing about this game is that because it was against a team that's A, in your conference, B, a team that just won your conference tournament championship, and you're going to play them four times. First game of the season, it's a really unusual season opener, having to play such a tough team. And so, you know, there weren't a lot of bench minutes, really, except for a couple of guys. And normally that first game is against somebody, you know, although the last few years it's been on the road in North Carolina where there have been really close games up there in Wilson. But, you know, normally you want to play everybody, be able to play everybody. And, dip, you know, sometimes like last year we go to this five-on, five-off thing when he's trying to make some points. And I think it'll be a little different against Newberry, although that's going to be on the road. So you really didn't get that opportunity to play maybe the more minutes than you would have liked to have played a freshman of that caliber. But nonetheless, 9 points, 9 minutes, and he did everything else, I think, pretty well, too. Yeah.
And one thing I'd love to see was a South Miami High School connection between Lee and Miguel Arnold. Mm-hmm. Numerous times they worked together as they had Lee screen Miguel's man to free him up for a lot of open opportunities, and Miguel played a second great half. And, you know, the first half he didn't have the best half, and you guys heard Dip. He wasn't going to start him the second half, but he did, and it paid off. What were some other things you guys saw that, you know, you enjoyed watching from the team?
Well, you know, a 59-29 second half, that just left me kind of buzzing for hours after the game. It was really neat to see him in such great form for at least 20 minutes of the game. You know, Miguel Arnold, I like, you mentioned him, I like how aggressive he was off the dribble. You know, the first half, I felt like he was in the mode where I'm going to catch and shoot three-pointers when the opportunity comes. Second half, it was, give me a screen, I'm going to come off, I'll go ahead and elevate if I get any space and let it fly. So many of those shots, he scored 16 in the second half, so many of them rolled in and out. So he was even shooting better than the statistics say. I think he ended up 7 out of 14. So, you know, great job by him. And, you know, just the balance, five guys in double figures. You know, there's a lot of enthusiasm. Tyree Myers lays – oh, goodness gracious, I almost forgot. Do you guys remember that play when Darren is on the floor at half court getting after a loose ball after knocking it loose from the dribbler? And then next thing you know, you've got, you know, a drive on the baseline coming from the left. And so they, you know, try to throw it from the baseline to the opposite corner on the right corner. And Darren goes from diving at half court to helping the helper and laying out like Superman and deflecting that ball out of bounds. You know, I was going to mention Tyree Myers laying out, getting a foul call, which the women's team didn't like at all. And they made a lot of noise about that. So bodies were flying. If you had to locate one thing that was the most encouraging about the game, it was the bodies flying throughout the second half, the inspired play with zero fans in the stands.
Yeah, I really like the way Tyree played. I think even though he didn't shoot as well as he'd like to from the field, he was 3 of 11. He was the quarterback. He had 4 assists. You know, he didn't have very many turnovers. My son was like, why didn't Coach have Tyshawn throw the ball inbounds to Tyree there at the end? Because Tyree never misses clutch free throws, and he's 5 of 5. But on the other hand, you want somebody who can throw the ball in well. He's the quarterback of this team, and I've said over and over again, you know, wherever this team goes, and who knows whether they're going to have a tournament or not, big tournament or not, it's ultimately going to be kind of where he takes them. And he is the driver of the team. And I agree with you. You know, yes, Lee and Darren were the main sort of sparks in terms of the intensity on defense. But Tyree was right there with them. Yeah. And then he has to bring the ball up against their pressure. They were going 94 feet under pressure only on him. They weren't playing a, you know, zone press, but on him. The other point guard was guarding him all the time, and he handles that with no problems at all. And he had a little bit of an injury problem last year that he played with. It looks like it's, you know, much, much better. If that's the case, you almost can say the sky's the limit with this team. This is a Final Eight caliber team if it gets really going. The problem's going to be, as Dip said over and over after the game, has been saying in the preseason, with the virus – and with the quarantines and the cancellations, we've already had one. You just don't know what you're doing. And they've only been playing basically with 10 guys in practice. They have 14 or 15 players. But between illness and injury, you know, I think the only concern, you know, it really right now, other than not getting to play enough people that first game, is Troy. How long is it going to take him to get, you know, to get back to being 100%? Because you're absolutely right. He is lights out as a shooter. He does a great job, you know, man-to-man defense. And if they have him going along with Whitehead and Sellers, they got a pretty doggone good team. And there's some other guys who are going to help them too, I think. Sean Moss is one of those who's got a great attitude for a guy who doesn't get to play a lot. But when he comes in, he's got speed. He can play some defense. So, you know, this was a good opening night. They're going to play this team again in a few weeks. And they're going to play them two more times when it really counts. And only 16 games this year, conference games. And that's another thing. Last year we sort of started slow but finished strong, came back and finished second. You can't get behind this year like that. Somebody else will win easily, I think.
Yeah. And I wanted to highlight Tyshawn Crawford real quick. I mean, you know, last year he had some struggles at the free throw line. You know, two nights ago he goes 6 for 7. What was it like, you know, seeing his improvement from the line like that?
One of the things I think about Tyshawn's game the other night is that he had 16 points and he made all of his field goals except one and all of his free throws but one. And, I mean, if he can shoot like that, man, they're tough. Unfortunately, Chad's going to have to leave us. He's got an emergency situation he's going to have to deal with. So, sorry about that.
And then, so, obviously, during the game – when Augusta was up 65-64, Darren Lucas White picks up two big key steals, back-to-back possessions, and I think that was pretty much the deciding factor that kind of stretched the game out after that. Lander never got, you know, as close as they did when it was 65-64. Right. You know, what was your reaction seeing those possessions and, you know, seeing Darren Lucas White grab those steals?
You know, he had set for a few minutes because there was a rotation. And that's Lander. You know, we kind of built the Augusta kind of built up a decent lead. I don't remember what it was, maybe 6 or 7. And then they hit a couple of baskets and got it down to 1 when he came back in. And then it was amazing. It was boom, boom. And, you know, he's stealing them from their guards who had really played well in the first half and are really good guards, as we saw last season. But again, I do think Lee's play, you know, all around, both on both ends of the floor, had kind of got that initial spark of energy going. But Darren's capable of doing that all the time. The big problem Darren has that anybody who plays defense like him, and I've been thinking last few days about all the great defensive players I've seen in the last 50 years, you always have to worry about a guy like that getting a foul trouble because sometimes the refs cannot quite keep up with the quickness of a guy like Darren. And so they'll call fouls on him. It's almost like being a big man. You know, big men get fouls that, you know, really shouldn't be fouls. But I think that's the only thing you have to worry about. And it happens every now and then to him. He gets, you know, 3 quick fouls. And I've seen him get 3 fouls in just a few minutes, and Dip has to put him back on the bench. But, boy, that was an amazing – and I just absolutely love it. I mean, I think I was sitting up high taking photos, and I ran down to you and my son Viraj Bulla. And because I want Viraj to understand he's a 12-year-old player, and I want him to understand that's what wins championships. He's in love with shooting because of Steph Curry, and I'm like, it's you got to be able to play defense like Darren, and you got to have five guys tuned in, and that's what did happen at the start of the second half because Lander really lit it up in the first half. Yeah.
And normally, you know, Christenberry Fieldhouse always has a lot of fans there. What was it like for you, you know, experiencing the game without any fans there?
Never seen anything like it in my life, and I went to, at the time, a Division III school where we played in a really small gym, and, you know, all I can remember about that was there weren't very many fans. This was back in the 70s, so there was a lot of disco being played as loud as the speakers would play them, and that was about it. But this was way weirder than that. I mean, it was sterile, which I think is good, of course, in the sense that we have this pandemic going on. So really, the enthusiasm came from two sources. The Jaguar players themselves, and of course the same thing for the Lander players, and of course they're not sitting next to each other, so they're not there's no high fives going on. And then thank God for some of our women's players, because they were up about 10 rows back sitting together with some other people, wasn't very many people. The athletic director, you know, Coach Bryant was way up high too. So, you know, and some of the TV people who were for AU Athletics were cheering, which they probably, you know, since they're former comm students, I should tell them, you know, you're not supposed to do that. But I mean, that was it. There was the only noise going on other than the noise the players make themselves and the squeak of shoes. And it's going to be like that all season, though. You know, I don't know if we're going to really see the pep band or the dancers or the cheerleaders. And, you know, there were no parents there last night and no faculty, and it's just really odd. But that's where we are. And as Dip said 1,000 times after the game, it's better to be playing. It was better to get this going no matter what had happened in the preseason than not. And, you know, we don't know if we'll end up playing 22 games or not. But it is vital, I think, that we play somehow or another. I guess the only concern you ultimately would have is, you know, should the players and the refs be wearing masks or something? But I just don't think that's feasible. You're a cross-country runner, and, you know, there's just no way you can breathe with a mask on. So there are going to be illnesses. There's no question about it. But, wow, was it weird. When I walked in, I was like, did I just come in on practice? You know, is Dip going to ask us to leave, you know? I don't know. What did you think?
Yeah, no, it felt really strange. I mean, I always – know the field house to be hyped up with fans that are there every home game. I mean, you know, there's fans that have season tickets, so, you know, they're always there and stuff. So it was crazy to see it just completely empty, you know, not hearing any crowd noise at all. All you hear is you could hear everything that the players were saying on the court. So it felt like a practice. It felt like the live practice that we were at a couple of weeks ago. That's exactly what it felt like. But yes, it was very strange. And now their game on Saturday was unfortunately canceled against Catawba, but they head to Newberry on Wednesday. What do you think are some things that they need to do in order to secure that win on the road?
Well, of course, Dip's going to have to look at tape of Newberry, who's already played two games. They're 1-1. They play Carson Newman and beat them 70-67. Carson Newman's over in the mountains of Tennessee. And then they play Western Carolina, a Division I team in the Southern Conference. They played them close, 91-84. So Newberry's up in the upstate of South Carolina. And it's always different when you play on the road. And they're led by a guy from down in Columbia. His name's T.J. Brown, and he's averaging about 24 points a game. So, obviously, going to have to see what he does. I think he's about 6'4", sort of a small forward, maybe if they run three-guard offense. So, they're going to have to figure out what they do. As a coach, you certainly would like to see the team play more consistently. Let's have two good halves, although basketball really is a game of spurts. And, you know, sometimes it's how many spurts and how long they last. And in this case, this was kind of a half-long spurt, although it did sort of have two phases. There was about an 8-minute, you know, 8 to 10 minute point, and then Lander almost got back in the game and then pulled away at the end. I think more than anything is Coach Mitras is going to see his guards play lights out defense the whole game. He was not real happy about that in the first half. There's always something that a really good coach is going to be upset about in an opener. And I hope he can be in a situation, I think he played 9 or 10 players, but hope that he can be in situations where that second sort of wave gets a few more minutes. Because down the road, you know, it gets harder when you're in a conference play to play everybody. And that's one of the real problems with this pandemic is the guys who are paying their dues every day, in some cases for 2 or 3 years in practice, you know, you want to see them get an opportunity to play. And it can be hard if you're playing teams as good as Newberry and Lander. So we'll see what happens. But I think, you know, they shot okay, 50%, which is good, actually. They didn't shoot threes quite as well as you'd like. I think we're 5 of 15, so maybe work on that. But that's gonna improve when Troy gets back, when he's 100%. I think he played a little bit the other night in the first half, I think. I can't quite remember. Didn't play at all. Well, I wonder when he's going to be able to play him. But in the meantime, you know, let's see how Whitehead keeps developing. I think also it'll be interesting to see Timmy Sellers develop, who I think could become a really good contributor to this team. He's a strong player. But remember, he hadn't really played in 2 years. He's sort of set for 2 years over in Charleston. And I think it's going to take a while for him to get back to, you know, sort of playing all the time. So he's another person who gives him depth. But overall, I think, consistently play defense well. And I think, you know, get Miguel going from three. But again, he didn't play poorly at all. He played a really good game. And Chaz Wright, there were a lot of in and outs for him. And get Tyshawn going really where he can catch the ball and score. And again, it's going to depend on he's probably going to see these double teams a lot. But that means somebody's going to be open. So that's going to, you know, but you can practice it. But when in their game situation, it's a little bit different. I think the other thing is you played that first half of the first game of the season, there's always kind of a, you know, you've been waiting a long time to play this game, 9 months, and you're jittery, and sometimes you just don't look very good. I'm sure some of that happened with the women, too. The women lost to Georgia Southern. That's no big deal because they're Division I. So that first game on, what was it, Tuesday night, that's understandable that they didn't play. I think they had one pretty good quarter, and then they had three that were so-so.
And they also lost to Emmanuel College, 76-59, I should say. But they still have a lot of players kind of contributing. And against Georgia Southern, junior November Morton, she came in and had a great game as well. And sophomore Ashley Boland, she contributed as well too. So I think they'll have a bunch of pieces kind of work all together. Coach Green, you know, just has them working hard. And I feel like they will start to get things going together with all these kind of new additions and more experienced players. They have a lot of junior guards to match, you know, with senior Zaria West. So I feel their guard play along with their big play with Kennedy Manning down low is going to be really good as well. And they will play UNC Pembroke on Saturday at home. So that'll be a PBC rival. So one of their first, not a conference game, but it is a conference opponent that they're facing this season.
Right. You know, and it's the same thing. They're facing the same thing that the men are facing in that, you know, you got new players. Practice has kind of been weird. You know, both teams had some issues with COVID. So players have to take, you know, 14 days off. So it may take a little while to get, you know, to where Coach Green wants them to be. But I do think she's developing a program. And, you know, last year made the playoffs, made the conference tournament, that is. I suspect that they'll be better this year. And it's just going to, you know, you just have to take it one game at a time. The chemistry will take a little longer to develop with the new players. Once that happens, you'll start to see the results, I think.
Thank you for listening today. The Sports Squad is a production of Bell Ringer Phoenix Media. The producer is Lauren Salzman. The coordinating producer is Dr. David Bula. And I'm Carlos Rodriguez, your host. The opinions stated here are those of the individuals, not Augusta University. See you soon for our next broadcast in a couple of weeks. You can find us at aubellringer.wordpress.com and on social media. Have a great day and listen again soon. We're out.